Sports Day for Kia, with Australia's best 7-year factory warranty. And Red Energy, born and bred in Melbourne. That's Red Energy.
7 minutes past six. Hello and welcome along to Sports Day. Lee Matthews not far away, but the Pies are on tonight, Scoop, and despite how wounded they are, they should still get the job done, which sets up the Demons and Collingwood next week. If Melbourne lose, they're probably cooked. And if Collingwood win, well, the Bombers can still make a solid challenge to the eight. But if they lose tomorrow night against the Suns, then all of a sudden, and Collingwood win the two, it does look as if the eight is pretty much set, unless someone comes from the bleachers, so to speak. Welcome to you.
Hello, Jared. It feels like a little while since you and I have been together on radio. In fact, it's been a week, which is a long time in footy, as Eddie used to say, even longer when footy is every day. I'm with you, Jared. I know people like to talk about the crystal ball with the eight from early in the year, and it can sound a little bit melodramatic, but it is well and truly on right now. And I think if you go just a couple of teams below that, with Essendon and Gold Coast, who I reckon the loser of that may struggle to make the eight, I'm with you. Carlton and Fremantle on Sunday.
It's a beauty.
I reckon the loser of that is just about nailing the coffin for the finals. And the winner of that might get some momentum up, given that their draw does open up. You'd say everyone from Hawthorn down is not going to make it. We've probably known that for a few more days than now. But yeah, between now and when we speak on Monday, I think we're going to know a lot more about the finals.
I love the look of Fremantle last night.
They were great.
Just, again, in the space of a month, he really has produced, or they have really produced some football, and they've produced some men.
Yeah.
Out of boys, and a couple last night were absolutely superb. You can join us on the Harcourts open line. The number tonight is 1300 235 5548. I'll give it to you again because it is different. 1300 235 5548. And for Club Mandalay, the must-play golf course in Melbourne's north, we've got a couple of 18-hole vouchers to give away. Before we go assessing those who will and those who won't, let's welcome the bloke who's done it all. Great to have you on board, Lee. It looms as a game that Collingwood should win despite being wounded, but if they don't, Pandora's box will open up tomorrow.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it's one of the great misnomers is this old one soldier out, one soldier in. Yeah, it's coaching propaganda, the pick and plug comments. Yeah. Seriously, coaches got to believe that because they're trying to sell that to their players. Doesn't matter who's out there, doesn't matter the talent of the players, our system will beat the other mob system. I can tell you, Jared, that is crap. And Collingwood are proving that at the moment. When they're without DeGoey and Pendlebury and Howe, Sidebottom's just back in, Treloar's out tonight. I mean, they're about 80% of what their capacity could be. They still might get over the top of Adelaide, but if they don't get those players back pretty soon, they won't even play finals, because that's about as basic it is. You need your talent out there playing well.
And I think we've seen that with Essendon. I think reasons why Melbourne copped such a major spray by just about everybody, it seemed, 2 weeks ago, is that their injury list is not that great. But it probably puts into perspective just how good Fremantle's been in recent times, Lee, because they're playing good footy and they're finding a way to play some good footy, but their injury list is as long as anybody's, if not the longest in the AFL.
Yeah. Well, Michael Walters, obviously, has been busy in the last few weeks and a couple of their big defenders. You know, when I was hearing you talking about, I was looking at the ladder in front of me at the moment.
Yep.
And it's always a bit confusing at the moment because some teams have got 6 games to play, other teams have got 7 games to play. But the team after this round, I mean, it's like the big if I know, but say the Giants get over the top of the Swans, and Collingwood get over the top of the Adelaide tonight. Richmond have played 11 games. They could be 7th or 8th on the ladder, and most of us think their best is still maybe the best in the competition. So they you know, with 6 games to play, they could have trouble making up the ground to even be in the top 4. They could be in knockout territory from week 1.
Yes, it's going to be really interesting. Just on Frio, Lee, your thoughts on the job that they've done? Because last night, I must admit, I've had great hopes for Chera. I think he's always was always going to be a good player. But, gee, his improvement in the space of about 8 games has been extreme. Brayshaw, similarly, I think he's gone from, you know, probably their 5th or 6th best midfielder now to in the best 3. And it just does, I guess, do the roll-on effect by the fact that they can have their captain playing out of the goal square more often.
Yeah, that's true. I wouldn't be getting carried away just yet. I mean, they beat a really understrength Collingwood a few weeks ago by 12 points, and yeah, that and Hawthorn aren't much good. Hawthorn are probably a bottom six team, and they beat them last night. But I guess with the injuries they got without Michael Walters, and yeah, some of the couple of their big defenders, but they only kicked 7 goals. So that was a funny goal game. I mean, yep. 7 goals wins it, and they didn't score in the last quarter. But Hawthorn aren't scoring much at the moment. I tell you the stat, though. I don't care what game of footy it is, Jared, because I really take notice of one particular stat.
Marks inside forward 50, Lee.
And everyone who's won that stat has won the games. St Kilda, Geelong had 14-6 against St Kilda, yep. And Freo had 12-6 against Hawthorn. So if you can mark the ball a few times in your forward 50, and this happens from game to game, and the ones who do it, I mean, it's amazing. Everything should be set up about getting that done. But anyway, they're useful, Fremantle, but I don't see that they've beaten the big boys just yet.
No, their draw does open up a little bit, Jared and Lee. So they've got the Blues on Sunday, and then they've got Sydney just after that. I'm trying to work out what
Fremantle
day.
Fremantle got Carlton, then the Giants, yes. Then Melbourne, then North.
No, they've got Fremantle. Sorry, Fremantle have
Carlton, Giants, Melbourne, North.
I missed a game.
Then Richmond, then Sydney, and then the Dogs.
Yeah, my fixture says they've got Carlton and then Sydney. Anyway, it doesn't matter. They've got those two sides in.
Well, they may. I'm assuming mine from Champion Data has come in the right order.
I don't think so. But okay. Either way, Jared, the interesting thing, the injury front, just that game on Saturday night at Optus Stadium, Justin Longmuir Lee said last night that Jesse Hogan will play against Carlton as a defender. And we can tell you tonight that Harry McKay has just been cleared to play and make his return. And they've got no key forwards as well, the Blues. So I wonder if we're going to have Harry McKay playing on Jesse Hogan, which we wouldn't have thought about a year ago.
I wouldn't be holding my breath that Jesse Hogan's going to kill him in defence myself. But anyway, we'll find out.
Okay, full stop.
That did sound like a full stop.
Now, Lee, I've got something here, research for you on one of your favourite topics, and that is accuracy.
Accuracy? Well, that wins your games too, Jared. That's a strange fact, isn't it?
my view is, Lee, that more than anything, it's particularly for sides like Port Adelaide. King Charlie, he's going okay, but you look at the Giants. The Giants right now, their best three forwards, their top three tall forwards, they're kicking in and around. One's at 80, one's at 70, and one's in the high 60s. That is an incredible return.
Yep.
And they need that to be because they're getting so little ball inside their forward 50. And I got some stats today from my friends at Champion Data just on the average, how it would change if those sides that are kicking over and above the average actually reverted back to an average return. And the Giants would drop out of the eight by three spots.
And Collingwood wouldn't have lost a game, Jared.
No. The Lions would actually go down by one spot, which is quite interesting because they have been pretty average. So I'm not sure how that one particular worked. But it is such an, like, for all the structures and for all the one man in, one man out issue, it just goes to, and I think we saw it on the game two days ago where if the Lions kick straight and the key forwards kick straight, it makes a hell of a difference.
Well, it does. I mean, but we sort of know that, don't we? But the fact is, it doesn't. Sometimes it happens. We can talk averages. I mean, averages is clearly what happens over a long period of time. It's a matter of how long you want to go to have a better average, I suppose. But nevertheless, the ability to take your chances. I mean, I was at St Kilda and Geelong last night.
Yeah.
Like, every week I hear, if we win the midfield, we'll win the game. I've always thought to myself, the midfields aren't that much different in most games.
Yep.
It's what happens deep forward and deep defence. I mean, what happens in those parts of the ground? Last night, Geelong absolutely were dominant in their full forward line, effectively, with Rowan and Hawkins. They were outstanding, kicked 9 goals between them. Like, Hawkins would kick 5 goals on a good night, but Rowan, like, 4 goals is a lot for him. He's not going to have 7 shots to goal too often, Gary Rowan. But they were outstanding. Down the other end, I mean, King and Membry could not get a kick against Taylor and, Henderson, Stuart O'Connor, whoever they, I mean, those guys back there. So in the parts of the game that are most critical, Jared and Sam, is at the ends. Who plays best at the ends of the field on any particular night, that's what wins your games.
Which brings me, Lee, to the question posed over the last 48 hours, and that is, if you're Chris Scott, and once again, Chris Scott has produced another excellent season to date for Geelong, not getting much credit for it. But over the last couple of weeks, he's played Paddy Dangerfield basically out of the goal square, or, you know, 85% out of the forward line. But Paddy Dangerfield is one of the worst converters at shots at goal, even though he gets plenty of options. Would you, knowing that he kicks at about 25% from his set shots, would you still play him as the forward, like an 80-20, if you could back your mids in?
Well, I don't think they can actually probably from game to game think we're going to only have Patrick Dangerfield in our midfield for 20% of the game. I mean, the feel of the game is critical there. I mean, last night, Menegola was outstanding as there in the midfield. I mean, and again, but St Kilda's midfield more than broke even with Geelong's midfield. I mean, that is always borne out by inside 50. St Kilda added more inside 50s than Geelong. So that means their midfield was doing pretty well. But, I mean, he's such a good player, Dangerfield, and I'd be trying to use Dangerfield, and they probably do, but like the Richmond use Martin. I mean, that's the prototype. In other words, they use them as forward half players. Don't think they're going to be back in the back 50. I mean, everyone's back in the back 50 occasionally, but try to use them as a forward half player, either setting up goals or kicking them yourself. Because as you pointed out, Dangerfield with a set shot from 40 metres out, and I used one of your lines last night, Jared, when they missed a couple of long shots are long behinds. I heard you say that many years ago. If you haven't shot from the 50-metre line, you're going to have mostly long behinds, and Geelong had a few of those. But nevertheless, I still think Patrick Dangerfield is such a good creator and not necessarily as good with ball in hand as Martin in terms of finishing himself, but he can create so much when you're coming off the half-back line into your forward half.
Lee, what would your reaction or what would your message be to your players if you were Brett Ratten waking up today? Would you just put a line through it and say you were tired after a short rest, or would you be worried about what happened last night?
Well, I'd be saying don't wear your concrete boots next week, because it's very hard to run in concrete boots. And St Kilda looked like they had the concrete boots on last night.
Certainly,
I mean, I was doing the coverage with Lloydie, and Lloydie, about 1 minute into the game, said St Kilda are off tonight. And they looked off because they looked slow. Brad Hill was a good example. Yeah. Butler was another example. Like, their speed players last night looked small. Like, often players are small and quick, but if on a particular night you're not quick, you just look small. And they had a lot of small players last night. Billings is probably in that category too, where Geelong just looked bigger and stronger, because St Kilda's strength is that ability to burst from congestion, you know, because they've got a few players who can do that, but not last night. They seriously looked like they had concrete boots on last night, and they plugged away, but Geelong were just too good for them. But I think what St Kilda were good at is playing a speed, move the ball quickly game. Geelong just blocked it up, and St Kilda didn't have the zip in their legs to be able to do what they normally do. So I suspect that's what Brett Ratten will be talking to him about. Yep. I mean, it's partly playing by habit. Like, when you're not feeling well, you're not feeling good, I'm a bit tired today, or I've got out of bed not feeling, that's where discipline comes into it. The things that you do no matter what, it doesn't matter whether you're feeling good, doesn't matter whether you're feeling bad, this is what we do. And St Kilda had a night last night where it didn't look like they were feeling great, and they played that way.
And they didn't respond, and I think that was the major criticism of them. It was the major criticism of Melbourne a couple of weeks ago. It wasn't the fact that they were flat early. They just didn't respond. No late changes for either. In fact, they did. No late changes, Lee, for either the Crows or the Pies tonight. And it was interesting. I was just giving us your insights there about what the Saints looked like small. I was actually talking to a guy on the way in here who's associated with the Melbourne Footy Club, and he made one observation of that match last night, Lee. It didn't St Kilda look small last night?
Normally they look quick. Last night they look small.
Lee Matthews is with us for Maccas. This is Sports Day for Red Energy and Kia, the best 7-year warranty across the entire Kia range.
We're here for Red Energy. We're born and bred in Melbourne. That's Red Energy and Kia, of course, Scoop with Australia's best 7-year factory warranty. Lee, question without notice.
Ooh.
Melbourne have got their captain, Max Gawn, coming back into the side for the game against Collingwood, who will play tonight, and then they'll back up again on Saturday night. They dropped Tom McDonald and kept Luke Jackson in. They brought Tom McDonald back, and all three, Sam Wiedemann, Luke Jackson and Tom McDonald, played reasonably well. If Gawn comes back in and they have to basically drop one, who do they drop?
Of that four. Tom McDonald.
Back to Tom McDonald, last in, first out?
Well, basically that, I reckon. I mean, I didn't see a whole lot of that game, but I just think Luke Jackson is a really promising young ruckman forward, and so is Wiedemann, is a really promising sort of marking forward. So if you can't play all four, and I think, well, I mentioned it last week, the thing, Tom McDonald's the experienced player with that trio, Luke Jackson and Sam Wiedemann.
Yep.
So he might be drawing the ball too often. And that can happen. Like, in other words, you've got to be careful playing your experienced players, you know, in the same mix as your inexperienced players, because they tend to draw the ball. The ball gets kicked to them all the time, you know, all that kind of stuff. And, I mean, Melbourne seemed to have been better when Jackson... They had a good period with Jackson and Wiedemann when McDonald was out, and they might have played out on the weekend with McDonald. So maybe they can fit all three. But that is one consideration, I think, that they have to be thinking about, and I'm sure they are. How does it all work with them all in?
I wouldn't be surprised. Well, I'd be surprised. But if I'm there, I'd be advising them to have a crack at Tom McDonald on the wing. And I say that because Tom McDonald wins their... most of their runs. He's their most prolific long-distance runner.
Great
he's
athlete.
He's a tall. Yep. They're playing Tomlinson on the wing, and I don't think he's found his niche there. He went into the fence last week. You know, I just wonder whether or not it's worth experimenting with that. I know you can talk about height, but this guy has got so much run. He's struggling as a forward, and it's been going on for so long. I just wonder whether or not it's not worth an experiment.
So he's too good a player, Jer, is what you're saying, not to be in the best 22.
Well, I would like to think that, and he's also a great backup for Gawn. I mean, on the weekend, he was probably, of the three, he was probably the second best. He was in front of Luke Jackson, even though I'm with Lee, I would play Luke Jackson forward for the longer term. But just dropping McDonald when, you know, I don't think they're getting much out of Tomlinson at the present time. Jones is struggling on a wing. I just reckon it's worth an experiment, Lee, but you may say, no, we're too tall.
No, the experiment on the wing is probably worthwhile. I'm not a fan of wingers who aren't good ground-level players.
Yep.
Like, McDonald's an aerial player. I mean, but Tomlinson's a bit like that too.
Yeah.
And so I'm not, you know, but hey, why not give it a try? I'm not saying not give it a try, but again, I doubt whether a Tom McDonald type players can find the ball enough as a running wingman. He might be able to run, but I just don't think he's going to find the ball enough and be good enough when the ball's at his feet.
Did you often have to rationalise that, Lee, as a coach, that you've got guys who are out of form, but they're too good to be out of the 22, you had to sort of move the magnets rather than put them in the twos?
Well, I'll give you one example. One of our assistant coaches who shall remain nameless, a couple of times, if Jonathan Brown wasn't going great in the forward line, why don't you put him on the wing? And Brownie could find the ball anywhere, I guess. Mm. But I kind of always thought to myself, but Brownie's still an aerial player. He's a ball in the air player, not a ground level player. And I kind of think you have to be good when the ball's at your toes. Of course, it's done more at your toes, you know, when you're running midfielder than it is when the ball's in the air and you might be able to sort of take the odd mark.
Watching Tom Hawkins over the last, basically for the whole season, actually, Lee, and particularly last night, because we all sat there and watch him dominate that game, getting a bag full. Your just mind wanders back to half time of the prelim final when the Cats were in control of that game versus the Tigers, and Tom Hawkins was in the grandstand. And yet they have got him this year, and they've got him. And if he doesn't get himself suspended and doesn't get injured, they go a lot of ifs. They go into the finals campaign a better side than they were last year.
Well, it's purely by him being available, theoretically, than he was at the end of last year. Now, that was a big out because, again, Gary Rowan was really good last night, but I think that's a bit of a 1-in-10 type game for Gary Rowan. Yep. Rabbit. But Hawkins, 5 goals. I mean, he kicked accurately, and he was strong in the contest. And when he got upfield, he marked the ball strongly. I mean, he really took it to Jake Carlisle. Like, Jake Carlisle just couldn't handle the body pressure that Hawkins was providing. So, no, yeah. Well, I mean, any team. Well, you could know Charlie Dixon at the Port. I mean, they're the top team. They've won 9 games. If Charlie Dixon's not there, they look a very different unit, don't they?
Mm.
They might have their same system, Jared.
One man in,
but
one man out.
Got Charlie to tick that. Yeah, one man in, one man out. But anyway, so the fact is, you know, Hawkins is really, you know, critically important to Geelong, but that's not saying anything no one else knows.
Another top 10 debutant pick. Wow, for the Gold Coast Suns. Sam Flanders is going to play against the Bombers tomorrow night. This might be one of the omissions of the year. If you told me this guy was going to get dropped at the start of the year, Jared, I would have laughed.
Alex Sexton
has been dropped.
Dropped.
No, he's been omitted. So the 2019 leading goal kicker, who was leading the Coleman for, I reckon, the best part of 7 or 8 weeks last year, he has been dropped along with Nick Holman, who's been struggling a little bit, and Jeremy Sharp. But look, Alex Sexton has been struggling to hit the scoreboard, and he's never been a high possession player. He's been dropped, Jared.
That Coleman medal, Lee, it gets in people's minds at various stages. I think we've seen it get in the mind of a small forward up in Sydney the last couple of weeks.
Where, not happy with Tommy Papley.
I reckon the last couple of weeks he's tried to kick goals rather than just get the decision right. And I've saw that with Sexton last year. Absolutely last year, Alex Sexton. I did a lot of Gold Coast games, and I'm a fan of Sexton's, but he was thinking Norm Smith medal.
He's a man after my own heart, Jerry.
That's right. You didn't handball much.
As long as you're inside 100 metres, you can probably kick a goal. That's the way it works.
The other one's out of Nick Holman. He's been a pretty good journeyman for them, and Jeremy Sharp. So one debutant in and one debutant out. Keep your eye on this kid, Flanders. Flanders, for me, I reckon, I don't know the politics, but my gut feeling is when John Longmire was asked which player he wanted, I think he was more thinking Sam Flanders rather than Stevens, but clearly the recruiting guys won the day up in Sydney. So he could have gone as high as 5, Lee, and I'm not sure if you've seen his highlights tape, but I know Robbo had somebody else reminding him of Jimmy Bartel, but this bloke is a Jimmy Bartel clone. He can take a great overhead mark. He's great at the bottom of packs. He's a great ground ball player. I think he's a real find for the Suns.
So just on those both teams, officially, Corbett, Fiorini, Flanders, the debutant in, Holman, Sexton, Sharp out. For Essendon, Bell Chambers, Dylan Clark and Gleeson are in. Out. Draper's been managed. Michael Hurley's been managed. There you go. And Jacob Townsend out with that injury that he got knocked out,
concussion,
didn't he? Concussion last week. Hey, just before we go to a break, and we're 3 minutes away from bounce down between the Crows and the Pies, Jared and Lee, did you see the footage of the Crows going after Max Gawn last week?
I haven't, to be honest.
Okay. Lee, I'm not sure if you did. Kane Corns is really strong on it and didn't like it. I've heard other players say, once you cross the white line, it's fair game. But was the targeting... What did you make of the look of it, Lee?
Well, I didn't actually see the specifics, right?
Okay.
As a philosophy, I got no problems with it, but what did they actually do? Did they do anything that was actually illegal? If the umpire was looking at it, say, yeah, no, you're not allowed to do that, I should pay a free kick or not?
No, well, I don't think to the letter of the law what they did was illegal, but young McHenry and a couple of other players on two or three occasions ran 70 or 80 metres away from... It wasn't as though they were running back to their position and just kind of bumped him. They really went after him off the ball. But I don't think anything was worthy of a free kick, in answer to your question.
Well, if it's not worthy of a free kick, then so be it. I mean, if you run from 50 metres away and bump into somebody, it should be a free kick. That's what I'm saying. If you're the umpire, or was it just... It was just a level of harassment that wasn't worthy of a free kick, but if you added them all up, it might be worth a free kick. Is that the summary?
Yeah, I think so. And Matthew Nicks said after the game that absolutely they didn't know that Gawn was injured. And I think Kane Corn said the next day, Jared, that he needs a new opposition scout, if that's so.
Well, that probably would be on the money. This is Sports Day. It's powered by Red Energy. That's real Aussie energy. Switch today. Shortly after the break, Lee Matthews delves into the minds of umpires and tells us why they blow the whistle when they do. Welcome back to Sports Day. We are underway and the Adelaide Crows have kicked the first behind scoop and it should have been a goal.
One of the stranger behinds you'll see all year. Taylor Adams, not sure if he was going for goal or passing, but it was a pass that went over to the goal square. Shane McAdam could have picked it up.
What was Shane McAdam doing?
He could have stopped and had a cup of coffee, actually. Yeah. He tried to kick it off the ground in a half volley Tim Cahill style, missed the whole thing, and it dribbled through for a point. Just about summarises Adelaide season thus far, Jared.
Lee, when a player does that fresh air out of the off the ground rather than taking it in his hands, is that a no-no?
Bad decision.
Yeah.
It certainly was.
I tell you what's interesting, and this you'll just notice this because now I'll point this out. The Gabba ground has got the cricket pitch in the middle, right? And they've been playing a lot of footy there, and they've played a few games there where there's been a bit of water, a bit of rain, so the centre pitch is a bit... So the grass cover on the centre pitch has been cut up a little bit, right? Yep. So they keep rolling it, but now you'll find from now on, when the ball sort of like after a centre bounce, if the ball actually hits the ground, it'll bounce about 4 feet in the air. course, it's like bouncing on concrete.
Yep.
So it's quite treacherous to read where the ball's going to bounce. So just note that at the Gabba. That's going to apply at the Gabba from now on.
Speaking about the Gabba, one of the elements I think that has not been discussed too much for the Cats is the fact that the Cats are winning away from Geelong. And yet, this time last year and every other year they've been close, they're saying so because they're only involved in wins at the down at the Gabba. Down at the Cattery.
Well, everyone's playing away from home. We understand that, but they're making a pretty good fist of it, aren't they? That's for sure. But they play at the MCG a lot. I mean, we always argue, and they argue probably in the early finals. You know, should you get the home ground advantage in the early finals? And the AFL always say, we play our finals at the MCG or Marvel, unless there's a non-Melbourne team in it against Geelong, and we might not get a crowd. Maybe then we'll take it to Geelong. So. There is reason. So, but they've always played well away from Cardinia Park, or not Cardinia Park. What's it called now?
GMHBA Stadium. Side bottom squandering an opportunity going forward. Another thing we're not used to hearing in 2020. And Taylor Adams has just been caught holding the ball. So Adelaide lining up to kick their first at the 3-minute mark of the first quarter. This is Sports.
Was he crucified or what?
No,
he got the holding the ball.
That was holding the ball about 20 years ago, I reckon, opportunity. This is Sports Day. Powered by Red Energy. Don't go anywhere because I think we're going to hear more about the umps from Lee Matthews after this. Oh, I'm used to Jared bringing back after that. It's always one of my favourite parts of the show. Adelaide have just kicked their goal. Tyson Single after the tackle on Taylor Adams is a lovely set shot from about 45 metres out on a tightish sort of angle. The Crows have started really well. 1-1-7. The Pies, Jared, here to score.
Yeah, the Pies are haven't got their hands on the ball too much, and the Crows are going inside forward 50. It's a game, Lee, that the Crows are never going to win, but they may win it.
Well, I don't know about that one. I mean, they actually only got beaten by Essendon by 3 points 3 weeks ago. So, I mean, they've had the occasional good game. I mean, everything's got to go well for them. But, hey, it's a very depleted Collingwood team they're up against.
Yes,
and on their home turf.
Yeah, it's incredible just the amount of injuries that they've got. It's been one of those years for Collingwood. They've been in the news for all sorts of reasons. And yet at the start of the season, there was a lot of people basically had them tipped off as their favourite for the flag.
Well, and I think that was warranted, to be honest. But if you can't get your best team on the field, most likely you're going to struggle. And Collingwood, really, when you talk about just tonight, Degoe, Pendlebury, Howe, I mean, they're three of their best half a dozen, most important half a dozen players, and Treloar's probably in the half a dozen too. They're fairly depleted. And Moore's injured. Moore's managed, and who else has managed? Someone else is
Hoskin out. Hoskin, Elliott, and Elliott.
Yeah.
So, Lee, the big talking point over the weekend, and I reckon it started on Thursday night, two nights ago, as most Carlton supporters think it started, and that is, again, focus on holding the ball, etc. It's amazing how it's changed in the last 2 weeks, where all of a sudden a lot more people are all of a sudden worrying about the rights of the ball carrier and the ball winner.
It's always controversial. There's been the holding the ball rules, like just the everyone should read it. It's only about half a dozen paragraphs, isn't it, in the rule book? What holding the ball and it's all about.
It's four,
the prior opportunity,
all
the kind of things that are in it. I mean, it's not a radio subject, but there's a couple of things that's interesting to me. Every paragraph says it only applies holding the ball when there's a legal tackle.
Yep.
Like, in other words, legal is not above the shoulders, not in the back, not below the knees, and clearly when he hasn't got possession. Well, I don't reckon there's plenty above the shoulders scenes. Oh, no, that's incidental. That's not a free kick. You know, that's what people say. And you fall on his back, and then, it's his fault. He fell forward. You know, but that one. But whether it's prior opportunity, incorrect disposal, the no genuine attempt one, Jared, and we've spoken about this, when they say it's a free kick for no genuine attempt, part of the sense is it, but the player is able.
Yep.
But does not generally attempt to correct disposal. Well, I said, like, I couldn't help myself last night. I'm doing the footy and the Geelong St Kilda game, and I thought to myself, do you reckon umpires have ever been in a weight room at an AFL club, right? And the reason being, do they know how strong the players are? Like, if you've got a player in a bear hug and you've got your arms around him and you're holding the ball to him, he is not able to get any disposal away. I mean, that kind of is a fact of life, but the umpires seem to just ignore that fact that the guy's in a bear hug, ball's being held to him. He said, oh, no, he didn't make a genuine attempt. And again, the old thing, we always said, don't blame the umpires, blame Gillon McLachlan, Steve Hocking, Grant Williams and Hayden Kennedy, because they're the four people that probably mostly dictate the umpires what they should be doing.
Lee Matthews on holding the ball. We are here for Team APCO. Still to come on Sports Day, it's the gospel according to Matthews, but Jared.
Can I just read you that rule, Lee? It's 16.6.4. It says, free kicks, holding the ball, no genuine attempt. Where a player in possession of the football has not had prior opportunity, a field umpire shall award a free kick if the player is able to, but does not make a genuine attempt. And the italic should be if the player is able to. And as you rightly say, Lee, when you've got three gorillas wrapping your arms up or sitting on you and building a brick wall on you, you are totally unable to. So people yelling at no genuine attempt is a nonsense.
The gospel according to Matthews is after this.
Well, that music indicates just one thing. It's time now for a reading from the Gospel according to Matthews as the boy Dacos, Josh Dacos, lines up to put the Pies on the scoreboard for the first time. Kick. And after kicking one of the great goals last year, he's gone back and slotted one 45 metres out on a 45-degree angle. Lee, chapter one of the readings, if you play with fire, you will get burnt.
Every time there's a thought or a concern about social media postings, whether they be vitriolic or abusive or racially discrimination, what have you, I keep thinking to myself, if you want to play in that space, you're going to get burnt. Like, I know you've got to stop the feral, well, if you can, I don't know how you stop the feral people on social media who pop on there and all that. I go on Twitter too every now and again, Sam, to see like you newsbreakers are breaking in the game. I love that. But if you don't want to be prepared to accept the abuse, then just don't play with fire. Don't go on it. I know that's easy for a bloke of my vintage, but I always think it. Every time there's a problem with social media, if you play with fire, you'll get burnt.
I remember when Twitter first came out, Lee, it was almost the thing to do if you're in the media to broadcast how many followers you had, and people were boasting about how many people were following them. Then all of a sudden these followers started bagging a lot of the commentators that were boasting. Funnily enough, they stopped talking about their Twitter handle.
Yeah, it's funny how that works. Second reading, Lee, is to stop blaming the victim.
Oh, this is the Callum Ward one from last week. I mean, He went in lower and then harder than McKernan did. He knew how to go into the ground level ball. He got contact to his head. Yeah, he spun out of the contact. But given that umpires don't pay above the shoulder stuff, no wonder players try to exaggerate the contact so that the umpire sees it and doesn't ignore it because they can't be bothered blowing the whistle. So people who can almost blame the victim, Neville Jeter a few weeks ago, even Tom Patley when he was bowled over by Frawley in the game against Hawthorne, stop blaming the victim. Why do we blame the bloke who's receiving the contact as if he did something wrong?
I think we do that because this notion of ducking the head went from a tactic that's been used for 1,000 years to almost something akin to challenging your manlyhood unless you kept your head upright and allowed it to be guillotined off. As another goal goes through to the Pies, and
Stengel,
it's Tyson
again.
Stengel again.
The Crows, you mean?
The Crows,
the
yes.
Pies got Pies supporters at home got excited.
Sorry about that, Pies supporters.
He received head contact. I was amazed at half the commentary, and we had a bit of a debate with Lloydie on the show on Saturday at lunchtime, that basically Lloydie didn't think it was a free kick. I kind of looked at that and I thought, how could you look at that and not think it was a high contact free? Anyway.
Yeah, he's very strong on the Nat Nui one. The AFL apologising for the Nat
Nui. I thought the Ward free kick was 10 out of 10 free kick every single day of the week. It didn't look good because he made the most of it. But had he not done that, it was still a free kick.
And I thought the Nat Nui one was play on and no free kick, no prior opportunity.
When
he got knocked out of his hands, no prior opportunity. So it is play on.
Yes.
Lee, an issue regarding the umpires. If you were taking control of the umpires, would you give them any sort of directive that you think may help them with their decision-making?
Well, to be honest, I mean, coaches try to make their players better, so I guess the umpiring coaches feel like it's their job to make umpiring better. I mean, that's logical, I guess, Jared. But we just mentioned, when you talk about the holding the ball, like, apply the rules. Just read the rules and apply them. And if an umpire is not applying them correctly, well, he won't get the big games. The ones who are applying them correctly get the big games. But just maybe I think we've got an umpiring coaching group and the AFL who are very much wanting the umpires to, to actually umpire in a manner that suits what they think is in the best interests of the game, not just applying the rules. And I remind you again, the only body in football that can change the rules of football is the commission. No other body can change the rules.
That's officially, but unofficially...
Well, that's what I'm saying. Unofficially, they've taken over the game. If I was Richard Goyder, I'd be asking, what do you guys think you're doing? Just tell your umpires to apply the rules, and if we change them over the summer, that's fine. We'll do that then. But anyway, yes. Now, that, on that one, on my... this is interesting, though. Does the end justify the means, though?
We'll like, get you to words, answer that after this break, Luke.
Time for a Sports Day news update for Tyre Power, your trusted tyre experts.
Yeah, Lee Matthews is here for Macca's McDelivery for when a Macca's craving hits, and get a big... free Big Mac with orders $25 or more via Mac Delivery. It's quarter time, Scoop. What is the score?
Yeah, the Crows have made a good start. 2-1-13, leading the Pies by a goal, who are 1-6. Rory Laird, 12 disposals, 6 more than anyone else on the ground. And the goal kickers, both Adelaide goals to Tyson Stengel. Good to see him making a positive impact for his club. And Josh Dacos with a goal after a poor kick switch in defence, Jared, from the Crows.
Lee, a final thought from you. Dermot Brereton believes that there's been a major reaction to the crackdown on the holding the ball, and people are staying put in their forward lines. Have you seen evidence of this?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that I don't think that's completely false. We've had some good players. I mean, I watch games of footy where the teams just can't escape the bubble, you know, the 70-metre bubble. St Kilda and Geelong both escaped it last night, so that didn't work out that way. But it's a bit like, okay, if we want to make the ball flow better, like the does the end justify the mood, so we crucify the bloke who's going for the footy, don't take possession, knock it on, and that'll be better for the game. Does the end justifies the means? That's the question.
And we'll get your answer next time we join you. Welcome back to Sports Day. It's all for Wilson Homes, and they believe in great design, so you love being home. You can join us on the Harcourts open line anytime, 1300-235548, 1300-235548. If you want to talk sport, give us a call. If you want to talk anything real estate, give Harcourts a call. And we just would like to say thanks to all our healthcare workers in Victoria. And Macca's are sponsoring a shout-out to any healthcare workers with a free small McCafe hot drink or medium soft drink until the 19th of August. So Macca's getting on board to say thanks to our healthcare worker. Well, still to come in the program, the athletic forward ruckman with the wild haircut from the D's. Luke Jackson is not far away from joining us. Ash Brown with his weekly Tuesday spot on what's in this edition in the AFL footy record. And, of course, the main man from golf, the voice of golf in this country. He's just marginally ahead of Greg Norman. Mark Hayes joins us from Golf Australia. Welcome to you, Hazy.
that's a great intro, Jared. Thank you very much.
Well, I actually haven't heard Greg Norman speak on behalf of Australian golf for a fair period of time, so I've elevated you to number one. And you must be thrilled when golf throws up a young, prodigious talent like Colin Morikawa, who picked up his first major only a couple of days ago.
Yeah, love it to be an Australian, but if not, I mean, he looks like he's going to be a really good ambassador, I suppose, for the game. I mean, 23 years of age, joins, how's this for a list, Jared? He joins Rory McIlroy, Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods as winners of the PGA Championship before they turn 24. That's a pretty good list, isn't it? So his future's as bright as it could possibly be, and to see four guys aged under 26 in the top 10 was also a fair indicator of what's going on in golf at the moment too.
You've given us the upside, given us the great names, but have we actually got a list of blokes who have won one really early and just never shown up again?
It doesn't really happen too much at all, to be honest. I mean, major championships are invariably won by someone pretty talented. There's a few asterisks, as we would say in a pub conversation, perhaps, about some of the guys who have won. But this is only his second major championship, and it's only inside his first 18 months as a professional golfer, and he's already won 3 times on the PGA Tour. So, got pretty amazing to think that you could do that at this age and with such limited experience at the pro level. But you know, he not only beat one or two players in a nice finish. It was a blanket afternoon of 10, 11 guys pushing for lead. There were 8 mixed at the same score at one stage at the top of the board. And he's played arguably the greatest shot since probably Tiger's little pitch up the bank at the 16th at Augusta in 2005 to win the tournament. He's basically hit a driver to 6 feet on a par 4 and knocked in the eagle putt when everyone else sort of floundering along. He just showed a couple of flashes of brilliance, just completely nerveless, and I think that's probably the best indicator of what's in store for him.
Not only was it a great sporting story, it was a story of great sporting romance, as my wife Lisa pointed out to me. How great was it that he had his girlfriend Catherine Zhu on the bag giving him some advice? So if they get married, well, she's going to be giving him advice right throughout his career.
Well, I'm assuming that Lisa still gives you advice, Jared.
Oh, that's what I mean. I mean, he's in for a year. He's in for a career of advice, on and off the track.
Well, he may or may not want to continue that trend down the track, but for right now, I reckon he's pretty happy with the way things are shaping up.
And hello, Hazy. She's also quite the golfer herself.
She is.
His girlfriend, the budding golfer. But Hazy, I just wanted to ask you, and Jared and I were talking about it a little earlier. Can you talk us through his tee shot on 16, the short par 4? Everyone had been having trouble with it. Tony Finau had actually gone to 3-wood because his driver was going over the back. But Colin takes out the driver, Jared, and hits this big fade into a pin on the right. Mm. Essentially, you couldn't attack it where the pin position was. Hits it to 7 feet, rolls in an eagle. People were talking about it, the shot of the tournament. It might have been the shot of the year.
Oh, no, it's the shot of whatever decade people consider it in, without any question. So, I mean, it's as I said a second ago, it's probably the best shot in a major championship since 2005. People have been raving on, including myself, about this course was set up, Sam, for the bombers, all the long hitters. And yep. Morikawa is long by human standards, but not by pro golf standards anymore. And it's a win for the people who shape the ball because, as you say, the pin's in the right. The wind's a little bit off the right. He dialed back a little bit, didn't have a full swing, and just bounced it perfectly in front of the bunker at the front right of the green. It hopped over, rolls up to 6 feet, and it clearly is the shot that just broke the tournament apart. And very rarely can you say that definitively. This is the moment that sets up a win, let alone a major championship win. And people like Jason Day, who don't hit the ball as far as some of the big hitters anymore, his play was to line it up out the left and just hope to sort of catch a break on the left side of the green in the bunkers. Tony Finau tried to lay back, as you say. There were so many different ways to play this hole. It was fantastic. But the only one who managed to do it under the gun, there was one guy earlier in the week who managed to do this same thing, but nowhere near the pressure that Morikawa faced. And for him to pull it off and try to watch it with that top tracer thing, that was really cool as well, because you could actually see it piercing the sky. And just the brilliance of his vision and then ability to pull it off. It's just one of those great sporting moments.
It certainly was. And unfortunately, we don't like talking about the negatives, but Dustin Johnson's record when it comes to leading after 54 holes in majors. I just wonder, Hazy, if you think this is... I mean, it's already something that's plaguing him, but you have to be a pretty good golfer to get into those positions as often as he does. He just can't finish the job.
It's remarkable. He's probably the Greg Norman of his era. He's not as good a golfer as Norman, but in terms of putting himself in position and not really getting full results at major championships, that's what he's doing. And that was the Grand Slam, Sam, of 4 major championships where he's had the lead or share of the lead coming into the last round and not gone on with it.
It's an amazing statistic.
Oh, it really is. And he's the first one to have all 4, I think, is my understanding. And I might be wrong there, but I think that's right. And look, he's one of the most ferocious and physically gifted ball strikers we've seen ever in golf, but golf's played above the shoulders, especially in the crucial moments, and that's what Morikawa shines with. And
yeah,
there's got to be a question mark on Dustin Johnson, because you know he plays such amazing, physically gifted shots when there's no pressure on. Yeah, it's just the compact pressure of a major championship seems to just eat away at him. He's only done it once, and that was a sort of a runaway win at Oakmont. I think it was 2016. Other than that, it's despite a lot of wins on the PGA Tour, because money's clearly no object to him anymore. The pressure's off there, and he can do what he wants, especially against lesser fields. But yeah, there's got to be a massive question mark on him in major championships now.
Did you see it as a positive or a negative for Jason Day? Clearly, he put himself in a winning position, wasn't able to get the job done, finished, I think, equal third. But he hasn't been all that impressive in recent times in majors. So in some ways, it was a step forward.
A massive step forward for me, Jared. I had sort of been in the crew of people sort of thinking maybe we'd seen the best of him. Yeah. And that may well still be true, but he's finished now top 10 in the last four PGA Tour events. And before that, I was questioning his ability to make birdie. He's definitely put that aside in the past couple of weeks.
Yep.
He played as well as anyone on the last day. He just left him too much work to do after sort of a lackluster round three. But three out of four rounds is pretty good. And the big thing for me that was a positive, for the first time in, I reckon, 3 to 4 years, because his putter was the thing that took him to the top of the world in 2015.
Yep.
First time in years, he actually started stroking in some putts when he needed to. It wasn't quite enough. It was nearly, but everyone except Morikawa, basically. But there were signs there that it's coming back. And, you know, if he can, it's a big, always another big question mark for him is the physical nature of the game sort of is wrecking him. But he showed signs that he still got it above the shoulders. So maybe if the things can come back together, all the planets align, he can do it again.
Hazy, I know there'll be a lot of people screaming at the radio when I ask this question, but I just wanted, for my own sanity, to know the rule once and for all. When Brooks Koepka lent on his... not Brooks Koepka. When Bryson DeChambeau lent on his driver and snapped the shaft.
Yeah.
And he was able to re-shaft it. So are you able to re-shaft a club if you don't break it deliberately, Hazy?
Yeah, well, I'm no rules expert, but I do believe the answer to that is yes. So if he was to have hooked it into the wild,
yeah,
and smashed his club down, he would no longer have the option to replace it during the round. He could replace it after the round. But because it was damaged accidentally and nothing to do with his intention, clearly he just put it down and it snapped after he'd hit a drive. It wasn't a violent act or anything like that. He has the ability to replace it. And I think that's a newly adopted rule, Sam, only in the past, since the golf rules of golf changed at the start of 2019, that's when that one came into play. So I think that makes sense. You wouldn't want Roger Federer to play with the busted string,
no,
for example. If he wraps his driver or putter around a tree, then it's still, that's his sort of can to carry after that. So that wouldn't be allowed, but a replacement in this circumstance was.
Jared, I've only ever seen that actually happen live once, and it was a guy who's probably the same size and weight as Bryson DeChambeau, Sam Groth. They probably hit at the same distance as well. Lent on his driver to pick up his tee and snapped the shaft.
Gee.
Unbelievable. But when you're that powerful, Jared, strange things can happen.
And when you're that strong in those big biceps, anything can happen. Can I ask you maybe a slightly controversial question, Mark, but I know you'll be up to it.
Hang on.
If Jason Day and Adam Scott never played again, they both retired tonight.
Oh, great question.
How would you rate their careers as fulfilling their obvious potential as 20-year-olds?
In comparison to each other?
No, just out of 10. Just give me a rating out of 10 how you think that they have filled the pages of their youth with their talent based on their results that we all know of.
You've asked me a lot of questions over the years, Jared. That's probably one of the toughest. I want to give Adam Scott an 8.5.
Well, he's got a great place in history, given that he's the only Australian ever to have won the Masters, but he has only got one.
He has only got one, and he did, I think it was the 2014 Open Championship at Witham and St Anne's. I mean, he'll kick himself till the day he dies about that one, but he's still playing well enough to win another one, but you rightly say his place in history is assured. And he has won around the world, and there's barely been a year since he's been a pro where he hasn't had a win. I think that sort of adds to his resume.
Yep.
I'm going to give Jason Day a 7. Clearly, winning a major championship puts him well above the average. But I think he'll look back and go, I've run so close so many times in majors. I think that was his, I want to say that might have been his 10th top 10 in a major championship.
Yep.
It's beginning to get slim pickings. Maybe 7's a bit harsh. I mean, it's a really tough baseline there. So maybe 7.5. He's done well, but he'll be the one, unless he can keep it together physically for the next few years, to think, geez, what I could have, would have, should have struck a bit more when the iron was hot, you know?
Yeah.
I think that he's got more raw potential, if that makes sense, back when he was a 20-year-old. So, you know, it's really good, but it's not great.
It is one of the toughest criteria of assessment, obviously, given that, you know, there's only four a year, and there's 100 fantastic golfers out there, all of whom you're competing with.
That's absolutely true. And the big difference, I mean, a lot of people make comparisons between tennis and golf in this instance. When you roll to the Australian Open or Wimbledon or something in the past 15 years, there's three or four people who realistically can win that tournament. When you roll to a major championship over the years, there's 10, 12, 20 blokes who you could realistically make a case for, and that's, you know, it's very hard to win one. So maybe I'm a bit harsh on those rankings and people are screaming at me now.
No, I reckon most people would agree with you. I think Adam Scott's been fantastic, but I think most people would say they left a couple in the bag, but they're bloody hard to get out of the bag. What about Jordan Spieth? Didn't hear much of him. Did he play at all in the USPGA? Because I didn't hear his name mentioned.
Yeah, no, he's almost a forgotten man at the moment, isn't he? He did play. He was thereabouts, but didn't really put himself in contention at any stage.
Is he recovered from his big choke in the Masters? Has he won since then? Has he been the force since then?
No, he hasn't. That's a really good point. You know, at that point, he's cruising along. I remember citing the statistic that Jack Nicklaus had won $850,000 in his career at the Masters, and that includes winning six times. At that point, Spieth was taking an average of $860,000 out of Augusta every time he went through the gate, like it was just shelling peas for him. And from that point on, that horrendous shot on the 12th, things haven't been the same, have they? I'd never really thought about that, but he is really constantly battling with his swing on the range. You never see him not grinding when you're at a tournament. He's full on with his coach, Cameron McCormick, still, and you know, working hard at it, but the magic isn't there at the moment. We all saw from 2015 through 2017, it was just breathtaking what he was doing, and it's just not there. It has to be in his bones somewhere, Jared, but we're not seeing it.
No, it'll be there. He'll re-emerge. He's too talented not to, but clearly he's going through some struggles at the present time. And in Australian golfing news, of course, Gabby Ruffles, a great Australian golfing name, defended her US amateur crown incredibly well, but unfortunately it ended in heartbreak in that on that final 38th hole.
Yeah, two holes of overtime after 3 days in a row, 36 holes in the qualifying rounds to get to the final on Thursday, and then Friday and then Saturday, and then backed it up with 38 in the final on Sunday. It's just that's a grueling test by anyone's imagination. Gabby had it, I thought, on her stick, and her opponent, Rose Zhang from the United States, just played the most extraordinary shot. If anyone had a chance to watch it, the third shot on the 36th hole is one of the great shots I've ever seen in any golf. Sort of ripped the title away from Gabby. They went down extra holes, and she eventually had a really bad horseshoe hookout putt, Jared, on the 38th hole, which might haunt her for a while. But then again, she's finished first and second the past 2 years in the greatest female amateur event there is in the world. So really, really bright future ahead for that young girl from the Victoria Golf Club.
So I'm going to ask a final question. Firstly, to you, Scoop, to give us the amateur's point of view, and then I'm going to go to the professional, to Mark Hayes, to get his view.
Go on.
How did you rate TPC Harding Park as a championship golf course? Certainly from the aesthetics, it had it all. But how did you rate it, Scoop?
Yeah, I really liked it. It was, I know Hazy said it was something that was for the longer hitters, but given the intricacies of the shorter par fours, I thought the par threes offered a lot as well. It doesn't have the lush surroundings of some of the greater golf courses in the world, but I just thought it was proof that it doesn't necessarily have to be. I thought it was a really good track.
Out of 10?
8.
8. What about for you, Hazy? Give us a brief assessment and then a number.
I thought I thought an astoundingly brilliant summary by Sam there. The only thing that was missing was no use of the phrase marine layer, Sam.
Okay.
that fog and everything around San Francisco always plays into that. But for a municipal, they call it a municipal course, a public course. Yep. I think it's a fantastic venue that anyone can play it through the year is also a big uptick. I would love to see more of the famous old American courses being used for these PGA championships, Jared. But given that that's not likely to happen anytime soon, I thought they handled it pretty well.
A municipal course rated second only to the Royal Edith Vale on Edith Vale Road. One of the great nine-hole courses in the country.
I love it. So I'll give Edith Vale 9 and I'll give Harding Park a 7.5.
Hazy, always great having you on. We'll chat again very soon.
Thanks, fellas. Appreciate your time.
You ever played the Royal Edith Vale, Scoot?
No, haven't been down to Royal Edith Vale.
At one stage there, the mozzies that came out of the swamps, now known as wetlands, they were bigger than golf balls.
Well, Jared, I would take the mozzies over isolation right now. Don't you worry. This is Sports Day. More for Wilson Homes ahead. We'll chat with one of their friendly staff today about personalising a home design to suit your individual lifestyle. And you are listening to Sports Day. It's all for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. It's now time to catch up with Peter Johnson, our resident tennis expert, Jared. There's not much tennis actually happening, but there's about to be quite a lot.
Absolutely, and a lot of argy-bargy going on off the tennis
court. Very
political. Very political, those that will and those who won't.
It always has been a political sport, though, hasn't it?
Oh, not when you're leading into majors, though. When you're leading into slam events, everybody's got their serious hat on. But this is actually... this has broken out into some sort of civil war about whether or not those that are playing are responsible or irresponsible, whether or not those who aren't playing are the same.
Yep.
Let's talk to the man who runs tennis in this country, or at least he used to, Peter Johnson. Welcome to you.
What a build-up, boys. Good to talk to you again.
Tell us about the US Open. Who's in the right, those that are turning up or those who are preferring to manage their tennis careers and their health by not going into the second most contagious COVID land in the free world?
Well, look, Jared, to a large degree, I think it gets down to where you're from and what you've experienced in your own country. But what I do think in the end of the day is that they have to trust the event to be able to put on a safe event, if you like. And I think that's what the sell has been the last couple of months. I've got to say, I've been a little bit surprised that there's been as many not go as we've seen. I think when we spoke a couple of months ago, I talked about like 95% of the top 100 playing. It seems like it's a little less than that. But I think that does get to a degree where they've come from. But the other thing that I think's happened, Jared and Sam, is the ATP and WTA, what they've done with the ranking system is sort of given them a pass where if you don't, let's say Rafa's not playing, because he's going to save himself and just stay in Europe and play the French, he doesn't lose his points from the US Open. He holds them for another 6 months. So you haven't got that sort of urgency that I've got to play for all the points that are there. And I think there's been a lot of aspects to this, as you alluded to, you know, pretty political to a degree, but a lot of factors but I think it does get back to where you're coming from. And why would you go to US Open? There's different reasons.
Well, there's one element to it in the men's, and that is the battle, of course, for the most Grand Slams and therefore the title as the GOAT. And one of the GOATs, potentially, has got a distinct advantage over the other contenders, and that is that he's already had the coronavirus. So unless he gets it again, which we're not sure whether that can happen or not, he goes into LA and he can go about his daily business and not have to worry too much.
Well, I think he's said himself, I think Novak is obviously who you're referring to, and I think he's said himself, and you see all the vision on social media and that he's practicing on hard courts. I think he's setting himself absolutely, he'll be there. And look, obviously with no Rafa, no Roger,
Kyrgios.
Kyrgios, you look, Songa, there's Stan Wawrinka. There's actually a few that won't be there. So it makes Novak sort of come in there with a, you know, he comes in as red hot favourite.
And in the women's event, a lot of them have pulled out. And there's a lot of people believe that this is just a walk-up start for Serena to finally equalise the record of Margaret Court.
Well, Serena's you know, being in the US and under the conditions, and she's training on the surface, and you know, it's up the road to be able to head up to New York. And look, it's certainly all set up for her, isn't it? I mean,
do you think Serena, John O, to butt in, do you think Serena would be playing if she wasn't in such close proximity to equalising this record?
Yeah, I think she would. I think she'd play the home Grand Slam, because I think she's living day in, day out what the US is going through.
Yep.
Make her evaluations. And New York actually right now is not what it was 6 or 8 weeks ago. It's one of the sort of the healthier spots, and relatively, of course. But I think the other thing that the US Open is set up is this really tight bubble. Yep. And enough of it. It's all about convincing the players about the safety, isn't it? And I think Serena's got that degree of comfort. And being American probably adds to that. The interesting thing will be, of course, that they're playing with no fans. And, you know, so much of it. And
it's going to look like the Davis Cup.
Well, I think that's the point. It's more, and with a lot of these tournaments, they're coming back. You'll see tennis reemerge now with US Open and then the French and then, you know, the tournaments towards the end of the year. A lot of it is driven by economics, and rightly so. It's not something to be ashamed of. I mean, it's part of what keeps the thing going. But I think the Australian Open's in the same category. If the event doesn't run, I think there's, you know, massive impact on Tennis Australia. It's got some scenarios where it can run in different formats. Like, let's say, for example, if you run it without crowds, you're still picking up your money that you're getting from your sponsors, your domestic broadcast, your international broadcast, your betting, and all that sort of stuff. So,
what sort of percentage would that be of the total income on a normal event?
Off my head, but if you're talking, let's say an event's grossing $350 million in total revenue with all your different streams, you're probably getting 50 to 60% of that maybe from your domestic and your international broadcast. So it's a fair whack. So if you can run it where your costs are, you know, some degree less than that, you're making a dollar. And whereas if you call it off, you're sacrificing all of that. So I think that's the thing that all tournaments are dealing with. How can we still be viable if we sacrifice crowds and say corporate box sales, etc.? Can we still make an earn? The ones that think they can are staying on. The ones who think they aren't are dropping off.
Yeah, well, I think it's a really interesting time for not just the tournament, Jared, but for the players. Like, I know it's easier for Roger Federer because he's had the knee injury, but he's going to start his next phase of his career at the Australian Open, probably coming a month earlier in November. Mm. I have a feeling that a lot of the players, particularly ones pulling out of the US Open, will do the same and just say, well...
Yeah, we think that, but if we're still under these incredibly difficult lockdown scenarios, even if it was stage three, it's not going to be a great place to be. So I just wonder whether they won't bypass Australia as well.
Well, guys, but one thing I'd say, Sam, I think I differ on what you said, because I do think it's ultimately, one thing you have to consider is that around 80% of the top 100 are European. And what is coming up after the US Open? I mean, Madrid just got cancelled, but you're going to have Rome, and you're going to have the French, and you're going to have a swag of tournaments still in Europe where players can play, and there is open borders within those countries in Europe at the moment. You're going to have players who play a fair swing in Europe. And I think then the attraction of coming down to Australia, even if you have to quarantine, is going to lend itself to players committing to that because they like Australia and the money's going to be on offer. So I kind of see the US Open as not necessarily the most important part of this whole resumption of play thing. I think it's, regardless of what happens in US Open, I think you're going to see a fairly solid European swing leading into players coming down, quarantining and playing in Australia.
There is a threat of a major second wave in Spain and in particular France at this stage, Jono. Is the French Open safe?
Well, I think they'll be on. I think they're just, what they'll do is if there's a bigger spike, and I've been watching those numbers, they'd probably pare back what their crowds allowance is. You know, at the moment, they've segmented the actual venue into you can only go to part A, B or C. They'll just cut the numbers, a bit like what's happening with footy, I guess. It's the, can we have half full, quarter full? You know, they'll just retract. But the one thing you can be sure of is that they will be on.
Well, maybe they'll do what the AFL has done and they'll move the French Open to Morocco and they may move Wimbledon to Scotland. who knows where these tournaments are going to be played.
Yeah, as long as they're played somewhere at some time. Jono, appreciate it as always. We'll chat soon.
Pleasure, guys.
Peter Johnson there, the tennis guru for Australian Made.
I just wonder, Scoop, do you think if it's, let's just say it's as bad in Melbourne, we haven't got on top of it. Do you think it's a chance that the Australian Open gets moved to Tasmania, for instance?
No.
Okay. Just sort of throw the idea up. You want to, I thought Gutsy Goodwin might have put his hand up and said, that's not a bad idea. We'll put that to our friend down in Tassie tomorrow night.
Oh, I can't keep up with Gutsy because he keeps changing his mind on whether he wants the footy or doesn't want the footy, or he wants the money and doesn't want the money. Anyway, this is Sports Day for Wilson Holmes. Don't go anywhere. Melbourne's rising star, Luke Jackson, and his hair will be stopping by for a chat this. Welcome back to Sports Day. We're here for Wilson Holmes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. Well, there's been plenty of like from the Demons recently, Jared. I know they haven't won all the games that they wanted to, and they're still recapturing all of their form that led to a preliminary final. But some of the youngsters have been particularly impressive, particularly their tall ones.
Yes, I think they've got one tall and one small. One of them's Cozzy. And the other one is Big Luke Jackson. He joins us on the line as the rising star for round 10. Welcome to you, Luke, and congratulations. I've enjoyed your form post the COVID lay day.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
You like yourself as a forward, or do you like yourself primarily as a ruckman? Because clearly you're doing a little bit of both at the moment.
And don't just say you'll play anywhere the team needs you to do.
None of those answers.
We want answers from the heart here, Luke.
Yeah, no, obviously I love both just as much as each other. I've been playing mostly forward throughout the pre-season and through the season, so I'm getting a lot more comfortable with forward, but either one I'm happy to play in and have most fun in those positions, yeah.
Would have been a bit more fun the last couple of weeks than it was three matches ago when it seemed like everybody was lining up to put you under the griller.
Yeah, I feel like I'm getting a lot more confident as the games go on. Early on, I was a bit nervy, but as I'm getting on with more games, I'm feeling in a lot better. And Goody and the coaches have made the role up forward really easy for me. So I just try to go out there and compete as hard as I can.
Luke, talk to us about the influence of Max Gawn. There's not many kids that would come into the competition and have someone like a Max Gawn to be able to learn from every day. What's been the... Just pick one thing that you've picked up from him early days.
Yeah, he's been really good. I'd probably say how professional he is. He obviously leads by example for everyone here. I'd probably say the way he goes about training and game day is something I watch from him really closely, and he's been performing really well this year, so I'd probably say just how professional he is, and he gets around all the boys as well, so he's been really good.
And the thing that that Luke has, not that Max Gawn doesn't necessarily have this, Jared, to his game, but I mean, Luke showed his capacity to go forward, kick two goals in the weekend.
Ground balls.
He's got
I think he's got Max covered.
Wow. Already.
I think he might have Max covered on the ground balls.
Max, that's cheeky from you because you know Max listens to the show.
I think you've got him covered on the ground balls, Luke. It's a question of whether you can get him covered on the other stuff.
Yeah, I don't really know. Max is a really good player, so I'd say he's got me covered in every area. But I'll try to keep learning off him because he's one of the top players in the comp. So I'll be looking to get as much advice as I can from him in the future,
Jared, when you were watching on the weekend, I mean, when you hear Max Gawn out, no Melbourne fan likes that. And I thought, oh, geez, how are they going to go with Goldstein in such good form? But the silver lining was it gave Luke a chance to have to come up against a Goldstein without having the fallback of Gawn.
Yes, it is interesting, that whole issue about the responsibility, the relationship between hit-outs to advantage and clearances. Well, the last time Max was out for 8 weeks, they won the clearances six times out of eight. So,
which doesn't make sense to me.
It's an interesting role that you play. How many times, Luke, when you go up for a hit, do you actually hit it to the exact spot you reckon you're going to predetermine hit it to?
Yeah, I don't really know. I try and tell the boys where I'm going to hit it, but you know, when you're so in the moment, when you're in the air about to hit the ball, so I think what I think is just go follow the ball up where you hit it. So
Half the time I might not hit it where I say, so that's a funny thing. But I try my best to hit it to the midfielders. Yeah,
it is an amazingly random event, Scoop. When you consider about it, you've got two blokes running into each other. One's got a jump. One's more of a ground ball.
Yep.
You got a bounce that goes straight up probably once in 20 times.
Yep.
So it's always going to favour one side or the other. And at ground level, you've got three blokes. Presumably, you're usually sort of bumping into each other. One wants to take the front spot. One wants to take the back. There are so many random elements to make
so variables.
Hit out to advantage come true, Luke. It's no wonder it only averages at around the 15%.
Yeah, yeah. I don't really have much comment on that.
Then there's people like Nick Nat, Jared, who can actually jump,
pause
everything, go back, have a look, and change where he hits it in midair.
Well, I'm looking forward to you taking him apart. Get his scalp on your belt as well, Luke. Just go with it. What's it like being up in the hub?
Yeah, it's not too bad. I've enjoyed it. Right near the beach as well, so that's pretty good. You're around your mates every day, so... it's been really good for me, I reckon.
Has Jonesy roped you into managing his kids, or is that not allowed in hub?
I think he's giving that to Zach.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, I think Zach might be looking after
him. Is he up there too? Or they're in the same hub.
They're all right there.
Are you up? Are you on the Gold Coast? Or are you up further north?
We're at Maroochydore, so I think that's a bit north. I think at the Twins.
So you're up near Noosa.
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic. Well, we wish you well. It's a big game coming up against the Pies. You're going to take on another one of the great ruckmen in Reg Grundy, and no doubt you'll take him to the cleaner. So you've got Goldstein and Grundy in the first two weeks.
That's
a good
start.
Double, isn't it?
Luke, been great having you on. We hope we can do it more often. Well done on your career so far in your year, and good luck for the rest of 2020.
Cheers, guys. Really appreciate it.
Luke Jackson there. Pick three by the D's in last year's draft, and he looks every bit of the player that they wanted him to be.
Yeah, he's got enormous upside, hasn't he? Wasn't it exciting seeing Action Jackson and then Cozzy?
Where do you think, get that famous crystal ball of yours, in 10 years' time, where do we think Luke Jackson's going to be playing his absolute best footy?
Same role.
So he'll be a hybrid?
He'll be a hybrid.
Right, yep. Okay.
We've got no doubt about that. He may be a little bit more ruckman as he gets a bit bigger.
Because there's not many over the years, and even right now, that are that good at that they can do both, really. I mean,
no.
Gorn and Grundy are ruckmen, aren't they?
Yeah, oh, definitely.
And Goldstein, they are ruckmen.
Yep.
Nick Natanui is a ruckman.
He is. He can. Nick Natanui kicked 23 goals in 1 year.
Yep.
When he went 50-50 with...
What year were we talking?
About 4 years ago. Now assistant coach at the Swans. Coxie. Dean Cox.
Yep.
So they both kicked about a goal a game, and they both had a stack load of hit-outs. So I think he'll do that. He may just venture a bit more down the Grundy role if he can find more football. He's a ground ball player, so I think he's got a chance to do that.
Matty Cruiser was the guy when he was fit that was the 60-40 ruckman forward. Like, he was a genuine rester at full forward and kicked goals.
And unfortunately could have been one of the all-time greats at that.
Yes, continues on his injury trail. All the best to Matty Cruiser. More Sports Day to come. Ash Brown is next for the footy record. Welcome back to Sports Day. It's all for Wilson Homes. They believe in great design, so you love being home. It seems like a while. I'm sure it hasn't been. It's been a while since you and I have been on radio together, Jared. About a week feels like a year in isolation. But looking forward to catching up with the chief of the AFL record, Ash Brown. Welcome, Ashley.
Good evening, boys. Nice to be back with you.
It's a very interesting week in news, Ash. And tonight there was a story broken by Thomas Morris about Aredia Lumumba allegedly giving Scott Pendlebury permission to use the word chimp. Where is this investigation heading?
Oh, it's a great story, and it's we've been all along we've wanted to believe what Aredia had said about what was going on at Collingwood. This turns that story entirely on its head now with the suggestion that he gave the captain permission. But how does that permission work? Would the captain say it, but nobody else? Or did it become widespread through the playing group? It's quite a remarkable story. I'm not quite sure where it goes from here, but well done, Tom, for getting the story. It's always been a bizarre story, this one.
How are you seeing it, Scoop? It's a very difficult one to assess this.
Yeah, completely. I mean, Tom's story was interesting because it seems like that word chimp has been such at the crux of the entire story. If if it's right and there was permission given, then it kind of muddies the waters of where everything is at.
Also muddies the waters for those who said that they didn't know about it.
Yeah, and I mean, Nathan Buckley, I think, is probably one of the more respected figures in footy.
Yeah.
Played with him towards the end of his career and then was involved as a coach. It's hard to believe that it was used as prevalently as what is being reported,
yeah,
and yet Nathan didn't hear it. But yeah, I'm with you, Jared. I find it a really hard one to judge.
Speaking of the Pies, Isaac Quaynor, it reminded me his injury, which we all saw the following day, of an injury I saw Calvin Templeton get at, ironically, Victoria Park. I reckon it was in round one, about 1982, and I looked down at his leg. It was either quarter time or three quarter time, and he had a gash that was, it would have to have been 5 to 6 inches long. And I looked at it, and I saw him pull up his socks, and then he went and kept playing.
Oh, you're kidding.
And I thought to myself, you are crazy. And I'm not sure how long he lasted. Next time I see the great Calvin Templeton, I'm going to ask him. But
when did the jab first emerge?
Oh, no, the jab's been around for years. But the jab's not going to handle it. This was an open flesh wound.
Yeah.
That, I mean, I just can't believe he didn't even strap it up. And now he may have well have done, but I looked at him and he pulled his socks up and I thought, oh, that is fantastic courage and fantastic. It was probably stupidity in some respects, but the coverage was interesting. We didn't get the close-ups. Do you think we should have, Ashley?
No, and I've written a piece for the Record this week. It seems to have been... the broadcasters now seem to be very have a sense of responsibility. I feel when there's gruesome injuries, we get pretty much now just get one replay just for the point, just to, you know, to explain what might have happened, and then we don't get to see replays again, which I think is a really smart way of doing it. I'm wondering if someone is the box occasionally, Jerry, whether that's an instruction now that from producers, we're going to show it once, and you just guys just keep talking. And we'll show vision of the player being treated and carried off the ground.
I think that is right on most occasions, particularly when it is, you know, like a snapped leg or something of that graphic nature. I'm not sure anybody knew what this injury was. I was surprised. No. I thought it was a snapped leg initially because of how slowly they were coming off, but he wasn't in enough pain. So it was quite bewildering as to what the injury was. And I didn't find out what the injury was until the next morning, and I'm not sure that even the broadcasters knew what the injury was.
Well, we didn't know until I was sitting up, because everything's on Zoom now, or a lot of it is, you get the press conferences, so you can have access to them, and Nathan Buckley actually said.
Right.
And he was the one that sparked the furor about the stops.
Yeah,
he thought that the Sydney player was wearing metal studs, and then Sydney said, oh, absolutely not, you know, he's not. And then the investigation found out that Buckley, in the end, was right. It was an interesting one from a media perspective as well, Ash.
Yeah, that's right. We didn't know what the injury was. It was really mysterious because it didn't seem to be a leg breaking the wrong way, which is often the case for these really serious injuries.
Yeah.
You're right. It wasn't until they spoke later. And the broadcast, I don't think the broadcast, from what I've, having made some calls about this subsequently, I don't think the broadcast even had the vision that showed what the injury was, and that's why we didn't see the replays of it.
No, I don't think it was actually graphic enough, or I'm not even sure it was in the incident that they said it was in, but I'm not sure what incident it was in because he was running at full pace. But it was one of those just freakish accidents. But what we did find out, more importantly, is that people are now wearing metal stops again for the first time in years.
That's right. I want to know, Jared, whether you when you played league footy, did the umpires check the boots?
They did. Indeed, they did. They came and checked your fingers for rings, and they checked your stops to see if you've got any sharp ones.
You know, Ash, the interesting thing about the next day, so I rang around a few players and said, you know, what boots do you wear? Well, what have you got? Because some wear, like Patrick Dangerfield wears a new pair of boots every game.
Does he?
Yeah, which I find strange. And I spoke to a couple of players who've been wearing the same pair of boots for 2.5 seasons.
Yeah.
So, you know, horses for courses. But one of them made the point to me, he was actually holding his new pair of non-metal boots.
Yep.
And he said, these plastic ones
are sharper.
Are sharp.
Yeah.
And he's, I'd rather be kicked by neither, but he'd rather be kicked by the rounded metal ones rather than the sharp plastic ones, which I thought was an interesting point, Jerry.
Yeah, I think Nick Riewoldt showed a couple of his. I'm not sure whether the fact, it sounds worse, but I'm not sure the fact that it was metal that caused the issue. It was just probably got him in
the
wrong spot.
It's a freak incident.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, it was good TV with Nick Riewoldt with the boots, though, because that's a sort of, it's such a fundamental part of the game. It's like that and the football itself. We actually don't know enough about these fundamental, you know, without boots you don't have a game, without footage you don't have a game. And we don't really get educated enough about either of them, I don't think.
Ash, can you tell me why the Victorian government thinks that they've got a right to somehow negotiate an outcome, given that I know they've got the contract, but they can't provide a ground, we assume. What? They can't provide a ground with supporters,
careful,
we assume.
Dude. Careful. You know that Martin Pakula loves this show.
I understand this, careful. But I'm not sure why Martin Pakula is putting his nose into this. I would have thought at this stage they've got other things on their mind. And this is, okay, do the best you can, AFL. You're an AFL competition, and you do the best you can.
I totally agree with you, Jared. I would have thought that it's basically you shake hands and say, you know what, AFL, we haven't been able to deliver. You can't play the grand final this year. It's mainly on us because of things that have gone on. Let's just extend the contract to 2058 or whatever it is. This year you guys are free to do whatever you like to get the best outcome for your competition. I don't understand why it's so complicated, and I don't understand why the government needs to get involved.
No, it just seemed like a little bit of grandstanding to me, and trying to sort of extricate a guarantee that the Brownlow medal won't be counted or the draft won't be here, the draft won't be there. I mean, it just sounded like nonsense to me.
Catching up with recent comments about the Brownlow?
Which ones?
Oh, just comments about, you know, what partners would be wearing given the warmer weather. No?
No, I haven't picked those up.
I don't want to get back into them because it sounds like Ash knows what I'm talking about. Players talking about social media.
Did I miss something there?
Social media abuse and its links to gambling issues. There was been a bit of action over the weekend with Mitch Robinson coming out on Twitter and talking about, you know, people constantly messaging and saying that they've cost him his multis.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
Josh Bruce actually then got involved in Twitter and talked about some of the threats that he'd been getting after not playing great games for the Western Bulldogs. It's just opened up Pandora's box a bit, but it's great that players are having their voice, Ash.
Look, I think it's fantastic the players having their voice and reminding those who use social media of not the responsibilities, but it will make a squad of difference. I mean, we've been harping on, you know, we've been asking for people on social media to hold off racially abusing players for the last 5 years, and it hasn't really slowed down. So I don't think the cowards with their keyboards are going to stop abusing players online. If a player's cost someone a multi, it's not going to stop. But I mean, certainly the players should raise it. They should raise it and shout it from the rooftops all the time. But I don't think it's going to change anything. But good on them for coming out and saying something.
And the worst part of some of that stuff, Jared, is that these people that send these messages, you know, some of them hide behind strange accounts. Others are, you click on their profiles and there's photos of them with their kids and they've got very reputable jobs. And,
you know
what I mean? Like,
you put the put AFL football into the mix and people with brains lose their brains. And as Hooksy used to say, blokes who normally can put wigs on and go and sit in the high court, actually put a pumpkin on and go and turn themselves into a peanut.
That's a great line from Hooksy.
We've seen that many times with many, many people. In fact, some of the nicest people I know, I've had to move away from at the football. You just get up and go and you think to yourself, well, I can never sit next to you again. You just turn into a pickle.
Yeah, well, that's what Nisha has said to me for the last 4 weeks at home on our couch.
Is that true?
That's true.
Are you that sort of supporter?
No, I'm just very anxious. Mm. You can sort of feel it. What else is in the record this week, Ash?
We're having a look at Ken Hinckley this week, and we've sort of drawn all the reasons Porter's doing well. One is what a great communicator he is to his players, has been for a long time, worked out how he's kept his message fresh, because it's not easy to do when you're a coach for 7-8 years, and they're flying at the moment, and hopefully he'll get the... He has an expression he uses all the time with his players. You get what you deserve, and you look at Ken Hinckley, he deserves a contract extension, and he might even deserve a premiership. So that's what I've had a look at this week in the record.
Yeah, it's been a great week for Ken Hinckley and for footy, given that he and his group played so well. You know, they've got a few things to sort out, but it was a statement game. It was great for the game.
It was the best game of footy I've seen this year by an absolute mile. And perhaps because there's been so many poor games, but I was just transfixed from start to finish of that game. It was just such great entertainment and great footy, and hopefully we'll get, you know, it's a sign of what we might get if Port are playing finals against some of these good teams.
Looking into your crystal ball, the Pies are playing tonight. Is the 8 set?
I think the 8 is pretty close to set, I think. I can't see it changing too much, I don't think. The D's are an interesting one, Jared. If the D's can put some form, they're finding a bit of form, and they've only beaten a couple of ordinary teams, but if they can get over the Pies in their next game, maybe they're the team that can make a run.
Yeah, well, there's only two outside that can do that. One's Essendon. They've got to play tomorrow night against the Suns. And then, of course, it's Melbourne up against the Pies. If those results go the wrong way, season's over. And then we start talking about whether sides are tanking and playing the kids.
Ash, appreciate it as always. We'll chat with you next week.
Look forward to it. Thanks, guys.
Ashley Brown there giving us, always enjoy your chats with Ashley.
Oh, he's always got a good insight and a good opinion on, from not always, the most predictable angle.
Oh, I just looked at that photo of Isaac Quayner's leg again. Nice, I don't know cut, why I did it to myself, but that was...
How many stitches?
I think they said 12.
Right, okay. I would have thought somewhere between the 12 and the 20. Sometimes there's internal ones as well as external.
Internal stitches.
You got to stitch up the sort of myofascia, and then you got to stitch up the.
Would he have just had a local for that?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Couple of locals.
Yeah,
couple of locals.
One might not have been enough.
This has been Sports Day for Wilson Homes. You can chat with one of their friendly staff today about personalising a home design to suit your individual lifestyle. Thanks for your company, folks. We'll be back tomorrow night, 6 o'clock.
See you, Jared.